You're listening to the New Security Broadcast from the Wilson Center's Environmental Change and Security Program. In his new book, Partial Hegemony, Oil Politics and International Order, Dr. Jeff Colgan offers a fresh perspective on international governing arrangements. By unpacking the role that oil politics has played in the global order, Dr. Colgan shows that what is commonly referred to as the international order is actually made up of subsystems that operate individually and can undergo significant changes without upending the liberal order. In today's episode, we're sharing Dr. Colgan's recent remarks at a book event hosted by the Wilson Center.
But I did want to spend today stepping back and thinking more about the general framework by which we should understand changes in international order, not just of this very violent kind that we're seeing right now, or at least challenges, but of a different type as well. And so the book starts, the story of this book really starts with the largest transfer, peaceful transfer of wealth across borders in all of human history, which began in 1973. And up until that point, this group of international oil companies known as the Seven Sisters controlled the vast majority of the world's oil reserves and production. And that gave them enormous power over countries like Iran and Venezuela. They essentially controlled the budgets, the government budgets of those. And so then a little organization called OPEC got together and helped its member countries turn the tables on what were at the time the most powerful companies in the world. And it was a huge shift in international order, which reverberated for years afterwards. And the reason, or part of what that represented in terms of a shift in international order, was that the governing arrangements in oil had changed quite dramatically. And one way of seeing that is to look at the volatility in the price of oil over time. From roughly the mid-1930s to early 1970s, where the price of oil was remarkably consistent. It was controlled very effectively by the Seven Sister companies. And you can say whether that was good or bad, but they were effective governing arrangements where the price, in fact, in the 1960s, the whole decade didn't change by even a penny per barrel for the whole 1960s. So there was incredible control over the price of oil during this period. And then that order fell apart. It changed. And so that really brings to mind some questions about what are the conditions under which we can have effective governing arrangements, and then why do they change? Why do they fall apart sometimes? And so the point of this is to say, look, actually, if you start looking through history, it's not just 1973, but there are other anomalies as well. But the idea of going back to this theory is to say, okay, well, what do we really mean by hegemon? IR scholars turn out to be amazingly bad at defining this term. Unlike international order, where there's like 1,000 definitions, most people just say hegemon, oh yeah, that's just the leading state. And they treat it as kind of an on-off switch. And if you are the hegemon, then you're hegemonic across all kinds of dimensions of power, where you're dominant militarily, you're the biggest economy, you're the leading technological state, you control natural resource flows, capital flows, information flows, all kinds of things. Right? And in reality, of course, a state could lead in some of these dimensions, but not all of them. And that's the world I think we're in today, and it's also the condition that I call partial hegemony. Right, and hence the title of the book. And so, okay, if we take that seriously, what does that mean? Can we just kind of plug that back into our theory and be okay? Well, no. Part of the reason that it's not so easy to figure out what's going on with international order is that we can't even agree whether international order is changing, let alone why it's changing, right? So if you look at foreign affairs or foreign policy these days, the pages are full of not only scholars but also policymakers arguing about whether international order is changing or to what extent, right? And so you have some people saying, look, this is, you know, completely, the liberal order is coming apart and the trade system is falling apart and the rise of China. And then you have others say, look, the fundamentals here about the U.S. military power and the breadth of the allies and dollar hegemony, these are all still intact. You know, nothing's fundamentally changed. I think this is fundamentally an irreconcilable debate so long as we are thinking about international order as one thing, as a single monolithic thing. And hence the idea of trying to think in terms of subsystems. And a lot of this book is about developing a theory around what does it mean to have subsystems of international order. And so I think about the whole world as being a series of kind of overlapping and interconnected subsystems, which are a collection of state and non-state actors orbiting around particular questions of governance, sort of functional questions. And sometimes those questions are answered well and you get kind of effective governance, and sometimes they're not answered well. But each one of those subsystems has kind of one nucleus, one functional question to address. And if that's the way we think about international order, as kind of this ball of subsystems connecting to each other, then maybe it is that change isn't so much linked to a hegemon and whether there is a new hegemon or not, but rather the conditions specific to that particular subsystem. And so just to, you know, make this more concrete, the book spends, you know, two-thirds of the book looking at the last history of oil, last century of the history of oil politics, and focusing on two subsystems. One is the oil production subsystem, which is fundamentally about, you know, how much oil do we produce and where do we produce it? And Bob's company is a part of that as well. And so are actors like OPEC and all Saudi Arabia, Saudi Aramco, et cetera, all of these different actors that play a role in that. And that's the one that I think occupies much of our attention, and rightly so, because it affects oil prices on a day-to-day basis. And so that's probably the one subsystem people immediately go to. And yet there is a second really crucial subsystem, which is about the question about how are oil fields distributed politically around the world. And that's a question that wars get fought over. Right, so most clearly demonstrated, I think, in 1990, when you have Iraq invading Kuwait and starting to move towards Saudi oil fields, and the U.S. and the U.K. starting to think, wow, are we going to put up with this? Is this something that we can withstand? And the answer very quickly became, no, this is not acceptable to have a quasi-monopolist in the hands of Saddam Hussein. And so there was a war to push back on that. And so that question is so important that wars get fought over it, which is why it's kind of the second really key subsystem. So stepping back from oil, one of the lessons, I think, from this history is to look at order and not see just one single thing, but instead to see in the terms of subsystems. And that allows us to see variation, where some are changing and some are not, rather than trying to find the one big change just after big wars or what have you. And that brings us back, I think, to that central question of how and when does international order change. I develop a theory around this. I'm not going to have time to get into it here, but it depends on kind of two key variables, which are sort of carrots and sticks in the lingo. The actual book, I use the terms strategic benefits and punishments for noncompliance. And it's that second one, punishments for noncompliance, that I think I really want to call attention to. Some of my IR scholar colleagues have paid less attention to that historically. And we are seeing, I think, a really vivid demonstration of it, unfortunately, right now, where you have Russia as a noncompliant actor with an international order, and the US and the EU trying to respond to Russia's war with a series of punishments, right? Economic punishments. I hope it stays economic and doesn't go more than that. And the end result of that is uncertain. And in particular, this what makes the Russia-Ukraine conflict so difficult, of course, is that unlike many other instances where strong actors punish the non-compliant actors, Russia is not, it's not North Korea, it's not Iran, this is a superpower. And so the end result here is very uncertain, and the degree to which any sort of punishment can be applied effectively is really uncertain on that. And so we might see a significant change in the subsystem involving national sovereignty or the regional security balance in Europe, and it's sort of a breakdown of existing order. The point of this book is to help us remember that international governing arrangements only work under some conditions, and so we should learn about what those conditions are. And the strategy, intellectually, is to move from the particular, the history of oil, to the general, the IR theory, and then back again to other issue areas that we might care a lot about.
You've been listening to the New Security Broadcast from the Wilson Center. Thanks for tuning in. For more information, follow us on Twitter @NewSecurityBeat and visit newsecuritybeat.org.